Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Bottled in China. I'm your host, Emily Steckenborn, and this is the podcast where we discuss wine, food, beer, and so much more happening halfway around the world. But today we're joined with Karen McNeil. She is one of the most respected personalities in wine, and she's best known for her award-winning book, The Wine Bible. The Wine Bible is the single best-selling wine book in the United States. And in today's podcast, we discuss how finally it's available in China and in Chinese. In this podcast, we also discuss her journey and how to decode wine in a simple and effective way. That and so much more in today's podcast. Before we get started, don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Bottled in China. And you can also make sure to share this podcast with everybody if you think it's an interesting one. And subscribe on iTunes and Spotify. All right, everybody, let's get started. All right, everybody, welcome back to Bottled in China. Today, I'm joined with Karen McNeil. You're an inspiration because I actually started off my career and the first or second book that I actually got was The Wine Bible. And there's a lot going on. We were just kind of discussing a little bit of what you're doing and there's so much information to share today. But first off, welcome to the show and tell us a little bit about your journey in wine because it's quite fantastic and quite exceptional.
Wow, Emily, that's a long and big question, I guess. Or I should say it's been a long journey. You know, I've been in the wine business now for about 40 years. The other day, I probably shouldn't have done this, and math is not my best strong suit, but I did tally up the number of wines that I've tasted, and it's over 500,000 wines. So I feel like I've got some experience in the wine business. But as a young woman, I didn't want to do ever anything else. And wine has always, I felt in a way that it had chosen me. But when I started, you know, there were very few women in the wine business. In New York City in the 1970s, there were 7 million people, but only 3 women in the wine business.
And that's pretty crazy because right now I know that you actually were in China as well, doing some events with Deborah Myberg and kind of also raising awareness, not only of wine, but you're right, woman in wine, which is quite fascinating. And that's actually, you know, very important. What was your philosophy and also what kept you going? Because I feel like at the beginning, if there weren't a lot of women in wine, I'm sure that there was a little bit of kind of adversity. Did you feel that? And what kept you going throughout this time and become really a pioneer, I would say, in the industry?
You know, I think that's a very interesting question for all women. What does cause us to keep marching forward and to keep sidestepping away from various barriers? I guess the answer is there is nothing else to do. You have to keep going forward. I loved my career. I loved my life. I felt I had something to offer in the wine business. I felt I was a good writer and communicator. So there really wasn't any other choice except to keep going. Now, of course, I look back on those times and I think somewhat fondly about them, right? But maybe even harder than the woman's part was writing about wine is really hard. And wine books typically don't sell very well. It's hard to get publishers to be interested in a wine book. Most wine books in the United States sell about 8,000 copies, and the Wine Bible has now sold over 1 million copies.
Actually, I want to dive into the Wine Bible because even today, it's still something that everybody has to have if they're in the wine industry. That's for sure. I haven't gone to any Somm's house without seeing that book. So how did that get started? And it's quite a comprehensive book as well. I mean, when you first came out, because now there's several editions, as you mentioned, you're also coming out with a third edition. And there's also a Chinese edition that we're going to talk about in a bit. But how did you come out with that idea? And this is just my feeling. But when I saw the title, I was also a little bit shocked in a sense, because you don't kind of expect wine and Bible, those two words, to be kind of a title. So how did that all get started? And also in terms of the title, did anybody say anything or did you feel like that was a little bit of a controversy?
It's of course a very good question. Well, you know, I remember when I started the Wine Bible and the first edition took 10 years, unpaid years to write. I remember so strongly how hard it was for me to learn about wine. If you think about, I started writing that first edition in the 1990s, before the internet, And if you think about what wine was like back then, I mean, there were no classes in the United States. Retailers didn't have tastings. Most of the books that were written by British authors. And, you know, you had to memorize certain facts. Those books came right out of the British school system in the 1950s. For the most part, they were boring and they weren't, I don't know, it was almost impossible to learn from them. So when I decided to write a book myself, which was completely a crazy idea, what I promised myself is that I would remember the fear, the pain, the difficulty of learning about wine, and that I would write a book that would be exactly the opposite of the books that I had tried to learn from. Anyway, I did write this book, and it took 10 years. And when I brought it in to the publisher, every year the publisher would call me and say, "Is it done yet?" And I would say, "No, it's not done yet." And he would say, "Come on." And I would say, "Well, it's a big book," I would keep saying. And he would keep saying, "Please promise me you're not in your pajamas and just doing nothing." And I said, no, I'm really working on it. It really exists. So finally, 10 years later, I walk in with the manuscript. It's a huge manuscript. And I'm sitting across from him, nervous, of course. And he's looking through this manuscript. And he looked up and he said, "Oh my God, this is extraordinary. And we're going to call it the Wine Bible." And I said, "Absolutely not." "No, you can't call it the Wine Bible. Are you kidding? Come on." First of all, that's a very big statement. And second of all, you know, what if people object from a religious standpoint? I have a lot of Jewish friends. I mean, you know, you can't call it the Wine Bible. And he said, he looked at me very calmly and he said, "Clearly you have not read your contract well enough, because the authors of books never have a say over the title of a book. You're considered a subject expert. I believe everything you have in between the covers, but the title is part of a book's marketing. And I trusted you for all these 10 years, and now you have to trust me. We're calling it the Wine Bible." I was like, "Oh no." But of course, he was right.
I think he's actually very right, because that's the one thing that stands out. I feel that's the first thing that draws you to it, because it is a little bit controversial, but it actually is a Bible, because there's everything you need to know. It's so well broken down. And I feel that even when I was coming back to do my Psalm exam, I went back to that book. I know I could choose so many books about food and wine or so many books about region, but I felt that just took away so much of the extra writing and just was straight to the point and perfect for reviewing at any stage in anybody's wine career. It's just the must-have book. And now it's in Chinese, which is kind of exciting. That's a big project, because if it took you 10 years to do that in English, I don't know how long it took to at least to do the translation. Why did you decide to do this in Chinese? And also, how long did it actually take for the translation? And where is it now?
Well, the translation took a couple of years, and it was done by our publisher in Shanghai called Shanghai Joint Publishing. And of course, it is hard, because a lot of European words and a lot of European names of wines don't translate easily into Chinese. So it was a labor of love, but China's so important. And I have, over the last few years, I've been to China many, many times. I first went to China in 1979, which was when almost no Americans were in China. So I both love the country, but I can also feel, as anybody can feel, this enormous excitement about wine in China. So I love that, and I wanted to be a part of that.
No, it definitely is exciting. But 1979, I think that's a little bit, was it for a wine event? And I'll have to follow up on that one. But that's actually quite exciting. Now, when you go to China, I remember that, as we mentioned before, you also did the California Wine Institute. What is your feeling about California wines in China? Obviously, now there's a little bit of a tax issue, but overall, people's appreciation for the wine. And what was your experience about doing master classes and presentations and working with people in China about the market?
Yeah, you know, I think in the first evolution of the fascination in China with wine, in those first early years France was, of course, what it seemed like most Chinese wanted to know about. And that makes sense. You know, France, it's sort of the mother ship and has such great and long history. But I think now the feeling that I get, especially among young sommeliers, is a much more expansive view. They want to know about more than just the top Bordeaux. And California has always represented this great freedom, right? It's an unleashed and wild and beautiful place. And the spirit of California, I think, really appeals to the Chinese. And a few years ago, when I came and did that seminar, we had standing room only, 100 people in the audience, standing room, 100 more people on the wine list. We were playing rock music. Everyone was tasting wine in sunglasses because we, you know, we said, we're from California. Come on, this is not Bordeaux, right? And I think that really broke a lot of ice and people had a huge fun time. And of course, the wines of California are world class.
So I feel like a lot of what you do is making wine very comprehensible. Again, that event that you said with the rock music, I feel it's a little bit extra. I feel like a lot of the time in the wine industry, we're a little bit boxed in. And also, we also have the Wine Bible, as you mentioned, which is really straightforward. So even in your kind of digital newsletter, as well as when you do presentations, how do you break down wine information? And a lot of the time, wine is so technical. What is your technique to try to make wine understandable for the public?
Yeah, there's an old saying in writing that to make writing really good, you should make the complex simple and make the simple funny. So one of the things that we work really hard at here in my office in the Napa Valley where we are right now, we work really hard to turn the binoculars around and try and imagine what would be confusing about this topic. Let's say it's Bordeaux. What's confusing about Bordeaux? And then to sort of step by step answer those logical questions in the reader's mind. That's a very different approach than most writing. Most writing, wine writing, is showing off. It's the writer saying, look at all this great stuff I know and you don't. And the reader can feel that, right? The reader can feel that you're showing off. I hate that stuff. I never do that. I spend an enormous amount of time being really conversational. You notice the Wine Bible, the thing that people love about it is that they tell me all the time, it feels like you're just talking to me. It feels like you're my friend and that we're just talking in a cafe somewhere. And that's exactly right. I'm always saying to my staff, stop writing these long, complex sentences. Break it up. Make it a simpler statement. If you really understand something well, you can say it simply. It's when you don't understand something well that you drone on and on in these long, difficult sentences.
Yeah, I think that's definitely very important. And it is true when you do read a lot of wine websites, it is the first thing that comes up is it's not very authentic and it doesn't feel like the person's actually saying it, like you mentioned, as if it was a friend. It really is something that's more technical, or I feel like they also don't really completely understand this, the subject itself. But, that's really important because you do write all the time, nonstop. Wow. I mean, I'm always quite shocked at how you can always find a new story every day. And you do that through a lot of the writing you do, which is more digital for WineSpeed. Can you tell us a little bit more about WineSpeed, as well as how you find new topics and just keep that so fresh and interesting and vibrant?
Well, thank you, first of all. We started WineSpeed about 3 years ago. And even though, of course, the Wine Bible is my baby, I love it. I realized that, of course, none of us have very much time anymore. And so we thought, well, let's see if we could do something digital that would just go to your inbox, goes to your inbox every Friday. It's free. And we would take all of our, knowledge and put it into fast snippets that you could read really quickly, sort of to kind of keep your fascination with wine going and keep your knowledge of wine up to date. And I guess, we're always on the hunt for information. The world is full of content. I feel like I can see content everywhere. I don't know. I've just trained myself over years to see a story. And that's what a good journalist does. They see a story in almost everything. And I think sometimes my staff teases me because we'll just be sitting somewhere and I'll say, oh my God, we've got to do this, right? Just all of a sudden. So I don't know. As a journalist, you just train yourself to see fun and interesting and important things.
And talking about different types of media as well, as you mentioned, you do writing and as a journalist, but I also see you that you're quite active on YouTube. You had a wine TV show. You have so many different outlets, Instagram, etc. What is the future of wine communication?
Well, we hope that it is something like Wine Speed. And I should say to your audience, by the way, that if you'd like to look at Wine Speed, it's really easy. It is free. Just go to winespeed.com and we'll send it to you every week. We have about 38,000 subscribers. So it's fun. You'll see. What is the future in communications? I think we are at a point, an exciting point, where there will no longer be just one thing. I think books will continue to thrive, but I think a lot of digital stuff will begin to happen as well. We ourselves started doing a lot of videos in the last year, and we put those videos inside of Wine Speed. Certainly, video will take a very large share of people's attention. Podcasts like this one, it's kind of nice that you can get information in any medium, right, that you love. The one thing I would say, though, is because there are so many mediums, it also means there are a lot of people in the game. And sometimes I get a little frustrated. I'm like, wait a minute. They just said something that was completely wrong, right? That isn't how that works. So I think you have to know your source, right? Make sure that whoever it is that you listen to or watch really does know their stuff.
Yeah, that definitely is something. I think now with Instagram, this is one thing I noticed, and it's nothing wrong, you know, it is what it is, but it was quite interesting to see on Instagram, everyone says, you know, WCT level 1 certified, and then they're writing about wine. And, you know, I love that because in one sense, people are getting into it and they're also spreading their passion. And on the other sense, I think level 1 is probably a little bit of a shy start, you know, it's a little bit early. But as long as they're spreading the right information, then hopefully that's the goal. And again, we just want people to get more involved with wine. And I think that's what you're doing as well, because we did just hear about a little bit of a drop off in the wine category here in the US, but you are still spreading so much news, discussing trends. What's your feeling, because you are based here in Napa, what do you feel is exciting about Napa Valley? You do tours. You also allow people to come here or across America. What do you think is the trends that should bring people out to Napa, out to come with you and see the valley?
Well, the best thing about wine is that it's a people business, right? The wine itself is, of course, fabulous and compelling. And I sometimes feel like I'm just sitting with another person when I'm sitting with a great glass of wine. But it's also absolutely fascinating to get to know the people behind wine. And they're all almost always really interesting characters. And I think the people behind wine also give you an insight into the wine itself, of course. So a few years ago, we started doing private wine. We call them experiences because they're not tours like a normal tour company. But, you know, we have good insider connections with wineries, mostly wineries that aren't even open to the public. So we do for our clientele private sit-down tastings, bringing you inside wineries in the way that I get to experience them or you get to experience them. But it's a way that most consumers don't ever get to see sort of the inside of the wine industry in the way that we do. So it's really very satisfying to do that. And as for trends, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think the best thing about wine is that it's not a trend. It doesn't lend itself to trends. It's made the old-fashioned way, right? It takes time. It's agriculture. It's immune, to some extent, immune to trends. I suppose you could say rosé is a trend, but rosé is a trend that has been going on now for 10 years, so it's not really a trend either. Instead of trends, we perhaps need a better word. I mean, I think there are themes that are happening in the wine industry. And one of them is the difference between authenticity and just really cheap commercial wine. That's something that has happened for a long time too. But I think as wine drinkers, all of us, as we become more sophisticated, one of the things we look for more and more is authenticity. After all, you're putting this in your body, right? You're not just putting a book up on a shelf or a stereo in your apartment. Wine is a very personal and almost private sense. So I think the idea that we all move according to certain themes and authenticity being one of the main ones is an important idea.
Yeah, that's perfect. Well, listen, we're almost out of time, so we do have to wrap up. And what we always do is we always have five quick questions that you have to try to answer as quickly as possible. So we're going to start. The first question I have is, when you do go around the world, I mean, I feel you travel all the time. What is one of your favorite wine regions? And I don't want you to be too biased, but what's one of your favorite wine regions?
I would go to Champagne any day. Because I actually, anybody in my office will tell you, I drink a glass of champagne every single day. I consider it indispensable to motherhood. For 20 years, hello mothers out there, believe me, this is the secret to patience in motherhood.
And okay, well, that's a great way to spend your day, though. That's a perfect way to enjoy the day. And I do think a little bit of champagne just brightens up the day. So that's a smart insight. Second one is, of course, when it comes to your book, you've translated that obviously into Chinese. What is one language you'd be interested in translating the Wine Bible?
That's a tough one. You know, it isn't yet translated into Spanish, but I would love to have it be translated into Spanish because Spanish is along with Chinese, such an important international language. So I guess I'd have to say Spanish.
And of course, for question number three, when it comes to TV. We didn't even, you know, dive into that, but would you ever want to do another TV show or something more along those lines, or even a wine film about your life or something like that?
I would love that. Yeah, you know, I love TV and I did quite a bit of TV as a younger woman, but you know, there's something so fabulous about being on camera. And it, for whatever reason, I'm not afraid. You know, most people get afraid with cameras rolling, but the ability to show people and bring people to wine regions is just a wonderful opportunity I would never pass up.
And of course, my last question is, how do we get in touch with you? How can we find out more about Wine Speed, as well as how can we get the Chinese version? I'll actually put some of the information in the footnotes, but also, do you mind sharing a little bit more about how we can get and follow your adventures?
Absolutely. You can reach us through @KarenMcNeil Co, I think. And our website is KarenMcNeil.com. And of course, WineSpeed is WineSpeed.com. But I think I'm the only Karen McNeil in the wine business. So it's pretty easy to find us. And of course, we would love to answer your questions or have you follow us and certainly love to have you receive WineSpeed. We really think it's one of the best things we do, along with, of course, the Wine Bible. Thank you, Emily.
Well, thank you so much, Karen. What an inspirational conversation, and looking forward to seeing this translated maybe in Spanish. But thanks so much. And everybody, we'll put more information in the show notes. Definitely make sure to follow her on Instagram, as well as take a look at WineSpeed. If you're into wine, this is something that you'll definitely want to subscribe for. All right. Thanks, everybody.